Tuesday, May 7th, 2013. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN, for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. Click on the radio schedule button, then the appropriate month. During the program, email your questions or comments to spingola1 at yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. There is going to be a march against Monsanto, and this is going to be taking place apparently throughout the world on May 25th. And this new Monsanto Protection Act, which was signed on March 26th of this year, gives executive powers to the USDA that grant permissions to companies like Monsanto to sell their garbage genetically modified seed to farmers without any judicial accountability. The provision is written in a way to assure farmers a profitable and safe venture with GMO seed, but in reality, this law is designed to grant GMO producers like Monsanto legal immunity from the health problems their products will absolutely guarantee they will cause you problems, health problems. This provision removes the judicial system from the picture, allowing Monsanto and other companies to dominate agriculture, selling genetically altered seed to farmers and damaging human genes, all without any responsibility for what they're doing. They're just monsters. They're psychopathic monsters. Alrighty, so to learn more about this, just Google March Against Monsanto. Alrighty, our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations. His website is wvfoundations.org. Welcome to the program, Rodney.
Well, good morning, Deanna. Thanks for having me on this May 7th, a rather melancholy day for me. Well, May 7th and May 8th, we all know what happened on those 2 days in 1945. May 7th was the day that Admiral Dönitz finally allowed General Jodl to sign the Instrument of Unconditional Surrender at Reims, France. It was repeated on May 8th for the benefit of the Soviets, who wanted their own show in Berlin. It is a rather melancholy day, you know, for me, for a lot of reasons. Going back to my younger days, I used to wonder why my, you know, grandmother used to say it wasn't no big deal. But, you know, the best way I can describe it is it's a day in which you realize, those of us that understand the truth and understand real history, understand that there's, you know, more to meet the eye, that the bad guys do win and the good guys do not always win. And that, you know, we have to be vigilant, and that the United States and Great Britain were on the wrong side of history. And I think that both of those nations, Great Britain especially, more so the United States, but the United States has paid a tremendous price for being the puppets of the Jews and being on the wrong side of history. And we'll get into it, because I know we have just a short time before we go to the first break. But, you know, just initially, May 7th, when Dönitz, and we'll talk about it because I have his memoirs here and what he was faced with, and when he finally allowed Jodl to sign that unconditional surrender, how bad it was for the rest of Western civilization.
Exactly. All righty, we are going to that 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Golden Stag Safaris invites you to hunt in one of Argentina's most beautiful scenarios. Enjoy the quietness of the Pampas and the 5-star accommodation lodge. Excellent food and wine included in your stay, all the while hunting big game in the Argentine Valley. an area known for having a wide range of game, excellent trophies, the biggest stags in South America, as well as many other species. All gold medal quality. One-on-one guided hunts, rental guns available with the highest quality scopes in every caliber, Land Rovers for transport, pickup at Buenos Aires Airport, and a private aircraft for charter is all available. Go to www.goldenstagsafaris.com to see photos and for more information. Again, www.goldenstagsafaris.com.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us at 1-877-605-9200.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Excuse me. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations. His website is wvfoundations.org. All righty. We were talking about, these 2 days that were what changed Germany forever. Absolutely forever.
Yeah, I think it also, you know, when I made this, you know, was talking to you when we were talking about doing this show, Deanna, we said, you know, coming up the beginning of the end, and, you know, people kind of, some people that's emailed me and says kind of confusing the beginning of the end, you know, well, that was the end of the war. I said, well, that's not what we're talking about. It was, I believe, the beginning of the end of what was the nation of Germany, but also in a broader sense, the beginning of the end of what used to be Western Christian civilization in Europe and in the United States, because what the international Jewish cabal did to Germany, beginning in 1945, and using World War II, because there's no doubt that the Germans in 1939 had no desire for a world war. You know, the Polish issue, we've done shows on that, Deanna. The Polish issue was a dispute, a small regional dispute with the Poles, and the Poles were used as a pawn by the Jews. You know, Roosevelt's hands was all over that, more so than the British and the French, and history will demonstrate that when more documents are released. But the model, what was used, was essentially, in a broader sense, this playbook whereby Western nations are culturally genocided, and we're going to see what happened. And you know, as Germany, National Socialist Germany, was a bulwark. They had driven out Judeo-Bolshevism. They had prevented it from going communist in 1933, which really, really, really stuck in the crawl of international Jewry. And then when they created this new economic system, and we're going to see later in the show, as we talk about the Allied Control Council, how a majority of their post-war policies dealt with economics. It dealt with two issues. One, economics, and they dealt with the other issue, the cultural genocide and the reprogramming of the German populace. And it's a playbook, Deanna, that we've seen in subsequent conflicts and occupation. Not only did they genocide the Germans, I'm going to get a little off track if I'm using an example, but the cultural genocide, what was done in post-war Japan, post-war, fast forward another, 50, 60 years to Iraq. You know, Iraq has been destroyed post-Saddam. It's this playbook where not only do we, destroy, brutally destroy the country militarily, but in the occupation, we destroy all of the culture, the history, the social norms, and leave in our wake something that is unrecognizable, and the people and the populace are confused. And it is absolutely criminal what happens. And this is why, and I think we've talked about this in prior shows, Germans in the post-war period had a lot of discussions. The Western media and the Western agenda-driven historians would like to have people believe that when Germany was divided between, the West Germany and East Germany, that people just were always just wanting to rush over to West Germany. But quite the opposite. In fact, Otto Ernst Rehmer, of all people, talked about, perhaps it might be better to, align with the Soviets at some point when he saw what was happening in the Western zones, the decadence, the American ization, and what was happening in the Western zone, where essentially Germans were losing their culture and losing their soul. But there was a lot of discussions. I mean, Mrs. Hines, who was on my April 20th program, Deanna, who I've done her oral history, she had family members that stayed in the DDR side, because for the most part, you've seen when the wall came down eventually, a lot of Germans made the decision, we'll just stick it out on the DDR side because we'll come out of it without all of this Western program decadence, and we will be able to hold on to most of our pre-war traditional German culture. And we've seen that. We've seen a lot of evidence in that, because after unification, the strongest pockets of political strength of the NPD, the National Democratic Party, are in the former DDR. And, it's a fascinating. I'm in no way advocating for the DDR, former Communist East Germany. What I'm saying is those people were able to, for whatever reason, they held on to the traditional culture pre-war. And it is it's just fascinating. There was a lot of discussion in Germany when they were divided. So, we're going to stick it out over here. We'll wait out, because they had some forethought. They said, we don't think this communist thing is going to last, and we'd rather hold on to our culture than succumb to the decadence of the West.
Can you just imagine being in their situation, having your country just bombed all to smithereens? Having all the death and the just everything, can you imagine yourself in that situation?
And then amazing. After the war, saying you can choose to be in the West and quote have your freedom, but we're going to take your culture and your soul, or you can live under the Soviet zone, the communist zone, and you're going to lose your freedom, but you can preserve your culture and your heritage. For the most part, you can look at what was going on, what was happening in the DDR. They weren't as atheistic as the communists in the Soviet Union and other places. They had a thriving they made some of the most beautiful wooden Christian nativity toys are made in the DDR, believe it or not. I have some.
Amazing.
It's amazing. The Stasi was officially anti-Semitic. They had an anti-Jew policy in the Stasi. It's an interesting. Again, I'm not advocating for the DDR. What I'm studying, I'm doing research on it, Deanna, is this conundrum, this conflict that Germans faced after the war. What do we do? Our country has been destroyed. And in my April 20th program, we heard from Mrs. Miller, who went back to Germany in the 90s immediately after the unification, and she did not recognize her country. You know, she lived during the Third Reich, and then she emigrated in the 1950s. So, you know, the country was still basically an occupied country. It was still Germany occupied, but she did not recognize the country as being Germany anymore, and she said she had no desire to go back because it didn't exist anymore.
Right.
And it's...
and so when they talked about freedom, I mean, you have to kind of figure out, okay, what do you mean by freedom? Because they really didn't have any.
Right, that's right. I mean, the decadence, and, you know, basically you look at the, if you look, you know, and I'm sitting there, I can understand the conundrum those Germans had, saying, you know what, I don't want the decadence, I don't want the pornography, I don't want an American Weimar. I can understand that. I can understand that. Where the Germans said, no, we're not going to stay in the DDR, we'll just go and deal with it, and it's over, and we'll just adapt. And I mean, I could understand the conundrum. The first of all, the Germans never should have been placed in that position to begin with, to choose between American Jewish decadence and Jewish communism, and that's what they were faced with.
Sure.
And you know, the ones that stayed in the DDR essentially rolled the dice and said they believed that the DDR would not last. But again, they could hold on to a lot of their tradition, their pre-war traditions, which for the most part was left intact. They were left alone. A lot, you know, that was left alone. What was messed with was this Marxist, you know, this Marxist experiment where, you know, where they're lined up with the Soviets. It was basically the Soviet zone. But it's a fascinating, you know, to read writings by these Germans that consciously made the decision to stay in the DDR because they did not want to succumb to Western Jewish decadence in the West. Otto Ernst Rehmer spoke about it.
And this was after, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. After so many of the females and women were raped by the Soviets to make that choice,
ma'am, and that is something that is just, I am absolutely appalled at. I mean, that was one that I'm having a hard time dealing with when I'm researching the Germans that chose to stay, because you had 2.5, almost 3 million German women between late 44 into 46 that were raped by the invading
monsters.
Monsters, the Red Beasts. Now, there were rapes also on the Western side, to be fair. There were rapes by the Western troops, but not on the scale as the Soviets. However, in the Soviet zone, they were refused to, you know, it was not, they couldn't even talk about it. They had to raise children, you know, half Russian children. They could not talk about it. And of course, you know, their loved ones who had committed suicide, who had gone down to the freezing rivers, because this was wintertime when this happened, and had thrown themselves into the river to commit suicide after being ganged. These weren't just rapes by single soldiers either, Deanna. I mean, this is something I think we should talk about. We should talk about the beginning and the end. These were gang raped by, you know, whole brigades of Red Army troops, sometimes 20 at a time, and they would commit suicide. But in the Eastern, in the Soviet zone, they could not talk about this. And in all fairness, in the Western zone, the ones that made it out to the Western zone, they couldn't talk about it there. It hasn't been until the last 5 years that a major German documentary actually gave some due to these women. And of course, these women are now, Deanna, in their 80s. And they finally went and interviewed them. And they finally got to say what happened to them, or what happened to their mothers, what happened to their sisters. And I tell you, the most poignant story I saw that really choked me up was a story of this little, he was a little boy then, he's probably in his 70s now, talked about he put his sister, his mother put his sister under a stack of hay in the barn, and she took the brunt of these Red Army beasts and had the little boy sit on the hay, and they watched and they drug her off.
Terrible, terrible.
They wouldn't get the little girl.
We are going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back.
Listen up. This isn't some Detroit car commercial. And this isn't how we do it. Not in any America I know. We don't take away the rights and call it public safety. We don't burden folks with something called Obamacare and call it affordable. We don't take what you earn and call it a fair share. That's not America. That's not how it's done. In my country, in my America, earning has always been better than receiving. If that's what you believe, this is America, and we're about to show you how it's supposed to be done. Step up and be heard by participating at AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Join us and stand up for the America you know at AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. That's how it's done. Now do it. You have a voice. Now use it.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Theravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Theravim? Simple. Theravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to Theravim.com. That's TERRAVIM.com. Theravim, the best supplements on earth.
An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available to be shipped out to you, rush delivery. Heart and Body Extract is a 100% natural, organic, and wild-crafted formula made out of garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, bilberry, butcher's broom kelp, mistletoe, ginger, and cayenne pepper. It is an excellent formula designed to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Order your 2-month supply by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. Take the high road to a long and happy life. Heartandbody.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations, and his website is wvfoundations.org. I know this is a bit off topic, but I'm sure you've heard about David Cole re-emerging, probably not necessarily willingly, but he was outed by somebody. Carolyn Yeager did a nice program on that last night.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure, Deanna, that was a secret because, but he'd been working down in Hollywood and West Hollywood, for quite some time.
Right,
and I knew that he was down there since 2010, working in the Republican Party, and so I'm not sure that that was any big secret. What had happened was he had gotten crosswise with a lady. And I don't know what the relationship was between the two and what it was all about, but even the lady that he got crosswise with had known that he was the David Cole who had done those videos and had been on Donahue and all of that, and just basically said, well, then I'm just going to say who you are. But even the people within the Republican group that he had to organize and work with knew that that was him.
Well, of course, he must have been, and as much as he had so much, he was on, all these programs and everything.
He didn't alter his appearance. He looked the same, except he had some age on him. He had about almost 20 years of age on him, but he looked the same. He talked the same. And so, this is not like, this is hard, the Charlie Kraft thing. This is not the Charlie Kraft thing. I'm just, I think that this is just more, I think this is almost, maybe it's like a Frank Collins thing, you know,
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking of too, like it's some kind of a psyop, to destroy the credibility of the revisionist movement, which was really, people were really starting to listen, and I think, oh, who knows?
Yeah, I was just kind of curious when that article popped up because it was emailed to me, and they're talking about, I said, well, yeah, but, you know, it was late 2010. I knew that he was down there in West Hollywood working with this Republican group, and, because, you know, a friend of mine, you know, where I live, said, you know, that's that guy that did the revisionist thing who's, you know, big time in the Republicans, and, you know, which I don't understand why anybody would be messing with Republicans to begin with. But
The Democrats, either.
Or either one. I mean, they're two sides of the same Jewish coin. But
right.
And there you go. So I guess it's a natural fit. But, I guess it's, you know, a new story. I guess he's pulled all his new websites down, and I wouldn't surprise me in the bit, Deanna, that he tries to come back in and, you know, rubs up to the revisionists and says, I was with you all along, and it wouldn't surprise me if somebody takes him in. I mean, you know, I was suspicious to the get-go. You know, he did that. You know, I will say that his, you know, the Auschwitz video was decent, but then the way that he vanished under the so-called threat of the JDL, which, you know, I never seen a substantial, anything credible other than, to me, it was, you know, one Jew giving cover to another Jew. And, you know, to be able to, you know, go off and make money in the Republican Party, and that's what he
did.
I mean, I think we need to put that in perspective. Basically, he did this thing, which I thought was basically to allow him to get in and to coddle in and to infiltrate the, you know, the revisionist movement. And then all of a sudden he creates this, you know, thing, I've been threatened, and walks away. And then he's making, you know, mega bucks as this, you know, operative for the Republican Party. And then he gets outed, and it wasn't even a secret. I mean, so, you know, typical. That's all I can say. Typical, you know, Jewish antics. And it goes to, you know, my position has always been, you know, a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. This is what they do in this business in the nationalist community, to where, you know, they're like what Mr. Taylor does over at American Renaissance, that we need to, you know, have some sort of parody or work with them on certain things. You just can't do it. You just can't do it. Their interests are very self-serving. They have an agenda, and their agenda is contrary to ours. They've been out to get us, and what we're talking about today, what happened in 1945, just absolutely demonstrates that.
Right.
So, anyway.
Kind of reminds me of the scorpion that promised that he would... He would not sting a frog that was going to take him across the river?
I've heard a frog and I've heard a coyote, and he did it and said, sorry, it's my nature. Yeah, I've heard that story. I just thought Frank Collin, you know, that's just what I was thinking when, you know, that article. I was just surprised that they ran that article, because it's been known that he's been down there, you know,
sure,
doing the thing for Republicans. And
I was thinking of the Frank Collin thing with this this radio host that I mentioned yesterday is going to lead a march, an armed march in Washington, D.C. on July the 4th. And I'm thinking, oh, that's great. That will seal the deal. You know, Washington will definitely want to seize guns more than they are trying to do now.
Well, sure. Anything to advance their agenda. Anything to be, you know, Lenin's useful idiots, you know.
Right. And Adam Kokesh is Jewish, so.
Jewish, yes. Absolutely he is. Absolutely he is. And he's the most profane, obnoxious, you know, person that I've ever seen. But what can we say? I mean, this is what they do. And that's what they've been doing. And it ties into what, like you're saying, that goes back to 1945. 1940 was the beginning of the end, not only of what was Germany, what was traditional Germany, and not only did they eradicate the borders, but they also eradicated, they culturally genocided the culture, they genocided the people. And the Germans saw that coming, and I wanted to divide up the rest of the program as I see another path. Hope we're going to break. We'll pick it up on the other end.
All righty. Be right back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Now more than ever, killing many viruses and bacteria in our homes and at work is important. With the flu epidemic running rampant, you need to protect yourself and your family the best you can with purified air. Our air purifiers not only kill many viruses and bacteria in the air, but on surfaces too. Our air purifiers will also kill molds, fungi, mildew, oxidizes chemical fumes and toxic gases, removes dust, pollen, pet odors, and smoke. We have portable units, HVAC and industrial size units. In our homes today, protect your family the best you can by calling 1-877-605-9200 or go to our online store at republicbroadcasting.org. Call today to receive your 10% off and free shipping on any home unit. 1-877-605-9200.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations. His website is worldviewfoundations.org. Alrighty.
Get into... Pardon me?
Just a question.
Mm-hmm.
When did you begin Worldview Foundations?
2009.
Okay. Just curious.
Yeah, late 2009. Yeah. The end that, you know, let's go talk about the Battle of Berlin, and I want to dispel a couple of misconceptions. You see it on the, quote, History Channel documentaries.
Oh, you mean the Hitler Channel?
Yeah, the Hitler Channel. They didn't believe, you know, Hitler was in denial whether the Soviets were going to go to Berlin, and, you know, they really paint a lot. Well, actually, on... April 15th, 1945, and another issue about, well, why didn't Hitler address the people and communicate to people as times are getting bad? Well, January 30th, Hitler addressed the nation by radio. Now, bear in mind, this is January 30th, 1945. Germany was being invaded from the east and from the west. It was being bombed to smithereens, carpet bombing, you know, genocide bombing. So, there, you know, there was very, you know, there wasn't a lot of radio capability under German control. Hamburg was still broadcasting, the big tower at Hamburg. Berlin was still broadcasting. There was a few left, but he addressed the nation, and he was reassuring the nation that things were getting bad, but not to give up hope. And it was an excellent broadcast. We can tell he was not well. He was tired. you know, the strain was on him, but he was still Hitler. And then on April 15th, this is right when he knew that the Russians were poised at the gates. The Battle of Seelow Heights, had just concluded. And this is what he said. And it's very clear that Hitler and the upper echelon of the NSDAP government, the National Socialist government, knew exactly what was at stake for their nation. And, you know, people ask me, why did the Germans fight to the bitter end? I mean, it was pretty clear. And make no mistake about it, the Germans knew what was happening. I mean, they knew that, you know, when you have Allied troops, you know, severing your country in two, you had the Soviets and the Americans meeting at the Elbe River. I mean, that was known. You know, people talked to one another. But why did they fight in basically a hopeless situation? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, you know, National Socialism itself was a worldview. People had remembered what had happened after World War One. They remembered the fact that the Allies in World War One had promised them, you know, Woodrow Wilson's 14 points. They had gone to, you know, into peace negotiations, and then there was a bait and switch. They were lied to, and then what had happened? They ended up with this monstrosity, the Versailles Peace Treaty. And then, of course, you had the Morgenthau Plan, which had been made public, and the Germans knew about it. So they knew that they were fighting. You know, they knew that their country was going to be decimated. They knew that they were going to be culturally genocided. They knew they were going to be cut up. So what did they have to lose? Better to go down fighting and fight, you know, honorably to the end. And that is the reason why. That's why the bombing camping, the idea that they could be bombed into submission and break their will to fight, they just never understood. Bomber Harris was just so wrong about that. He thought he could just, you know, terror bomb them into submission. It didn't work. Having them into, you know, it's why the Volkssturm, every time they called for persons to join the Volkssturm, they had young kids and old men joining the Volkssturm. They never were short of recruits. So on the this particular order, this goes to the Führer order of the day of April 15, 1945, and this is when the Soviets, this is shortly after the Soviets had broken through at Seelow Heights and were on the way to Berlin. And this is very prophetic. This is where Hitler is telling troops who were trying to prevent the encirclement of Berlin. What was at stake? This is what was at stake. This is exactly what they were fighting for. And there's just no doubt. Anybody that reads this, when he made this address to the troops, you know, he was telling them what exactly was at stake and what the future would hold. And it's just very brief, and I want to read it because it puts the whole Battle of Berlin in the beginning and the end into perspective. And I've read it before, and there's portions of it on your show, but this is the whole thing. Soldiers of the German Eastern Front, for the last time our deadly enemies, the Jewish Bolsheviks, have launched their massive forces to the attack. Their aim is to reduce Germany to ruins and to exterminate our people. Many of you soldiers in the East already know the fate which threatens, above all, German women, girls, and children. While the old men and children will be murdered, the women and girls will be reduced to barrack room whores. The remainder will be marched off to Siberia. Let me just stop there. That's the first part. All of that happened. All of that was happening. So he was aware of what was happening. Even, you know, there, by this time, you know, he was in the bunker. He knew what was happening, the atrocities in the East, and he was telling them, you know, and it was happening. They were killing, you know, the men and the old men and the young boys, and they were doing to the women. We have foreseen this thrust, and since last January have done everything possible to construct a new front. The enemy will be greeted by massive artillery fire. Gaps in our infantry have been made good by countless new units. Our front is being strengthened by emergency units, newly raised units, and by the Volkssturm. This time, the Bolshevik will be met by the ancient fate of Asia. He must and shall bleed to death before the capital of the German Reich. Whoever fails in his duty at this moment behaves as a traitor to our people. The regiment or division which abandons its position acts so disgracefully that it must be ashamed before the women and children who are withstanding the terror of bombing in our cities. Above all, be on your guard, and this is important, Deanna, against the few treacherous officers and soldiers who, in order to preserve their pitiful lives, fight us in Russian pay, perhaps even wearing German uniform. That's critical, because we know that there was Russian traitors within the armed services in Germany. They were Carneris was a big one. perhaps even wearing German uniform. Anyone ordering you to retreat will, unless you know him well personally, will be immediately arrested and, if necessary, killed on the spot, no matter what rank he may hold. If every soldier on the Eastern Front does his duty in the days and weeks which lie ahead, the last assault of Asia will crumble, just as the invasion by our enemies in the West will finally fail in spite of everything. Berlin remains German. Vienna will be German again, and Europe will never be Russian. Form yourselves into a sworn brotherhood to defend not the empty conception of a fatherland, but your homes, your wives, your children, and with them, our future. In these hours, the whole German people looks to you, my fighters in the East, and only hopes that thanks to your resolution and fanaticism, thanks to your weapons and under your leadership, the Bolshevik assault will be choked in the bath of blood. At this moment, when fate has removed from the earth the greatest war criminal of all time, the turning point of this war will be decided. And that was his last order. That was issued on April 15th when the Russians broke at Silo Heights and was on their way to encircle Berlin. But everything he was saying in that order was completely accurate. And he wasn't talking about do your duty to the fatherland and to the Reich. He was talking about do your duty as a husband, as a brother, as a father. He was talking about this is time, we're all family now. You're fighting for your families. So all of the propaganda that we hear, on the Hitler channel, that we hear from some of these agenda-driven historians, is absolutely incorrect, that he was demanding people, fight to the death. Well, yes, fight to the death, but look at the situation. But he wasn't talking in terms of, die for the fatherland. He was talking about fight for your families, fight for something greater. In fact, he described it, he described fighting for the fatherland as something unimportant at the time. And as we get further into the show, we're going to see about just how absolutely the difference in terms of courage of conviction and character between the Germans and the Allies, particularly in terms of occupation policies and character. I mean, it's incredible.
Right. Yes, it is amazing what happened, what the Allies did to that country. And it is always, you have to ask yourself, why? Because this was not the first assault. It had been going on for during the First World War and before that. And you have to ask yourself, why? What did Germany do? What kind of people were Germans that they had to be assaulted in such a way?
They said no, Deanna. For years, the Jews had their clutches. They wanted Russia, which they finally got. They murdered the Tsar. They killed him. They killed his sickly son, they killed his daughters, they killed his wife. They tried to do it in 1905, and then they finally got it. They finally got it through the Bolshevik Revolution, and they weren't content to just exile the family, murder the family, but they wanted Russia for its vast size and resources, and they always wanted Germany for its obvious technical, for its brain. They always like to tell people they want Russia for its brawn, and they wanted Germany for its brain, and they always had their eyes on those two nations, and they almost got Germany if it hadn't been for the Adolf Hitler and the NSDAP in 1933, because Weimar in some form would have sucked it up and linked up in some form to the Soviet Union eventually, had there not been any NSDAP. It was going that's the direction it was going. There's just no doubt. But that's my very simple conclusion is, what did they why? Because the Germans dare say no. They said no the German people said no in 1933. Go back to 1928 when the NSDAP had that string of election victories and started winning up until they got about 41% of the vote in a field of about 30 political parties in 1932. The people were saying no, we do not want to be Marxist, we do not want to be communist. And the not only did the NSDAP say no to kick the communists out, but to kick the Jews out. And if you look, in history, the last, all through history, we talk about the Jews being expelled and kicked out of 700 countries. The last country to actually kick the Jews out was Germany in 1933, 1935. And technically, they didn't really kick them out. They basically passed the Nuremberg Laws that says, you know, the Michelins got, you know, to stay, and they were still there in 1945 when the Russians arrived and raped them too, and along with their own POWs. But they basically said, you are not going to be a foreign enemy running our affairs. You're not going to be 1% of the population, you know, in charge of 80 million Germans. You're done. We're not going to have that anymore. We're not going to have you, Seuss, in charge anymore. And they said no. And they paid a horrible price for that. They went over there and got Franklin Delano Roosevelt. They, you know, they did their thing in London. And it's absolutely incredible that only a few people like to listen to this show, that can, you know, put this together, and the amount of work that we have to do to get people to see it. Now, I firmly believe there's a lot more of us out there that fully understand this, but it takes a lot of risk. You know, people are harmed for telling the truth, and you know, they're subjected to a lot of blowback and a lot of backlash, and, you know, for saying, you know, what people learned and what they're indoctrinated in schools. And we'll get to that too in the post-war Germany, because how the Allies did the cultural genocide, and why Germany no longer is Germany anymore, is really interesting. Yeah, there is hope. I'm looking at the chat room right now. Ask Rodney Virginia. I think that there is hope. And let me finish up on the Battle of Berlin in the rest of this hour, because in the second hour I want to talk about how they actually transformed Germany, how they did the cultural genocide. But if we look at the Battle of Berlin, and I always wanted to cover it, the Soviets went into the actual Battle of Berlin with 1,500,000 troops. The Berlin Defense Force, Deanna, was a collage of 40,000. And of that 40,000, that included a couple of divisions of regular Wehrmacht, but it also included Hitler Youth and Volkssturm. And it also included several Waffen-SS divisions, which included French Charlemagne Division, which ultimately was the very last to surrender, and some Dutch, if I remember correctly. But you had 1,500,000 Red Army troops fighting into the main city battle against a defense force of 40,000, which was not all German, regular, what you would consider Wehrmacht, like you've seen fighting at Stalingrad. It was basically a collage of Berlin police, Waffen-SS, Hitler Youth, who fought ferociously. Hitler Youth with Panzerfausts were responsible for knocking out about 900 Soviet tanks in street battle. And then the Volkssturm, the old people that, you know, old World War I veterans, some of them missing limbs, that took up arms one more time to fight for the Reich's capital. This was Roman Carthage. This was a modern Roman Carthage. These people knew that a way of life, that Western civilization was on the line, and they were not going to just go into the night easy, you know, without a fight.
Right.
And if you, Anthony Beaver, and remember I talked on your show before about, like, my grandma told me the story that doing our type of work, you have to dig for the diamond in the cat box.
Right.
And Anthony Beaver is he's not quite as bad an author as some of the others, but he has written a book called The Fall of Berlin, 1945.
Yeah, and it is
a good book. I will say that he's done a good job in getting all of the relative facts and the battle in there, and it is. He also wrote a book on Stalingrad. I didn't particularly like that one, but the Berlin book is good if you're looking for the actual material. And you have to dig. There are a few diamonds in the Berlin book, and there's wrenching passages in there where he talks about, you know, the tanks crushing the refugee columns, and that happened. You know, the Soviets ran tanks over refugees, people that were, you know, under the Geneva Convention. You're supposed to not harass refugee columns, but I think it's important for your listeners to understand that the Soviets were never signatories to the Geneva Convention. But yet, at Nuremberg, the Soviets prosecuted the Germans for Geneva Convention violations, of which the Soviets had violated, in which they claimed immunity because they had never been a signatory to it. It's just absolutely appalling what transpired. But regardless of the fact, you have 40,000 defenders holding out against an army of 1,500,000, and they had about 1,200 tanks going into the main battle itself. There was battles going on outside the city. because the Soviets were encircling. The Soviets never changed their battle plans very much. They would do a pincer to encircle it like they did at Stalingrad. Basically, the Battle of Stalingrad and the Battle of Berlin, Deanna, were almost clone. The Soviets attacked Berlin in much the same fashion in which they attacked Berlin. They did the pincer movement, the flanking movement to encircle it, and then they actually went in and did the house-to-house battle. The exception with Berlin is there was the Berlin Defense Forces only had about 40,000, and it was a montage of various forces. And they held out. It just went on. I mean, this went on for about a week and a half before they finally, General Fielding was the commander of Fortress Berlin, and he didn't surrender that city until after Hitler's death, and they were essentially out of ammunition.
Alrighty, we do have to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
The free and independent states of America were born July 4th, 1776. The 56 delegates signed the Declaration of Independence. Congress ordered it engrossed, sent to the several assemblies, conventions, committees, councils of safety, and several commanding officers of the Continental Army. After the war, several nations traded with the free United States of America. Any agency, officer, or employee acting as if the declaration were void or obsolete is without the right and the consent. They place themselves as an equal to the Creator and are warring with Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution and with the people. Our grand jury has been destroyed without the consent or the right. Return the grand jury customarily impaneled by the elected county sheriff and one where people can appear with information. McGilvery Machine Company, Reading, Michigan.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Time to relax and unwind. What better way to do so than with Santa Barbara Bells? For over 25 years, our wind chimes have been helping people to relax and enjoy life. Turn your home environment into a pleasurable experience. From the small overture chime to the large super bass, you will find just the right chime to enjoy. All wood, strings, and cordage are protected for long life, and all parts are rust-proof. You have 10 sizes to choose from. To see and hear more of the chimes, go to santabarbarabells.com or call us at 805-733-1513. Santa Barbara Bells is currently having a springtime sale. Come to the website and save up to 50% on all of our chimes. santabarbarabells.com.
And our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations, and his website is wvfoundations.org. I just want to make another quick announcement here. On May 8th, tomorrow, it is going to be Texas Israel Day. And they would like people to join them in Austin at the Capitol tomorrow so that you may all celebrate the Alliance of Texas and Israel. And apparently the Chamber of Commerce has put this together. and they would like to know how you feel about this. Now, if you're not in favor of Texas being allied with Israel, I would go there with some big signs, and I would let them know how you feel. So please join others. I know that there's some people in the chat room that are planning on going. So all you listeners out there in Austin or close by, please join with others and tell them how you feel about this situation, this alliance. All righty. Okay.
Deanna, I smell Pastor Hagee's stench. You know what? I was wondering, you know, I'm sure that Jews would love to do a chair dance with Hagee, but I'm not sure they could lift him up in the thing. But, you know, it's revolting.
It is.
I mean, they just, you know, I was recently in the hospital down in L.A., and I was surfing the channels, and there was Hagee doing a deal, a day to honor Israel. And there he was, a quote-unquote Christian pastor telling Christians how they have to be subservient to the Jews. Now, you know, I grew up and was raised by grandparents and my great-grandparents, you know, and I seem to recall the doctrine saying quite the other. I seem to recall some very strong passages condemning the Jews in the New Testament. And so what I'd like to know, and this goes to this culture, we're going to see examples of it, how Germany was culturally genocided after World War II. But we've been culturally, you know, we in the United States, we've been culturally genocided as well. They've taken our culture, those Jews that came over, and I keep telling people, and they look at me sometimes like I'm funny, that it was the Weimar Jews. It was the Jews that fled Weimar and came over to the United States, and they, you know, set up shop, and they infiltrated all of our institutions. And then, you know, come 1964, I actually had a show with Kevin McDonald, and I told him that my theory, my thesis was that those Weimar Jews worked and worked and worked, and then they put it all, they basically unloaded it in 1964-65, and I considered 1965 the year of Judaism triumphant, and he agreed with me. He said, yes, he said, that was the watershed year. And that's absolutely correct. If you look, you know, they were too busy with the war, making sure they got rid of National Socialism. But as soon as that war was over, Deanna, the Jews went right to work in the United States. And what happened immediately post-war? They basically got that quote-unquote greatest generation, which I think is the biggest lie and fallacy there ever was. Because I can tell you, my grandfather, who's still alive, tells me that there's no such thing. He said, what do they call this, this greatest generation? We fought our own people. We fought the wrong war. We fought the wrong opponents in the wrong war. Then we came back and allowed ourselves to be bribed by Jews with, you know, all of this so-called, you know, American dream, with gotten fat and sassy. And then what happened? He rattled off all of the stuff from 1964 and 65. He said, we're not the greatest generation.
Exactly. All righty, we are going to our 60-second top of the hour break. We'll be right back after station ID.